Okay, good evening, everybody. It's 7:04 p.m., and I'd like to call to order the February 13th, 2023 general meeting. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Owens? Here. Councilmember Driscoll?
Here.
Councilmember Makowiak?
Here.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Here.
Mayor Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Lewis?
Here.
Okay, all council members are present and a quorum exists.
Thank you very much. Good to have everybody here in our meeting, and those of you in the public tuning in, thank you very much for spending your evening with us online. We'll begin, as always, with our vision statement, and I'd like to ask Councilmember Taylor to read that statement, please.
We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you. We move on to the first item on the agenda is approval of minutes. These are the minutes for the January 16, 2023 general meeting. Council member Janine Driscoll has a motion for us on the minutes.
I move that we approve by unanimous consent the January 16, 2023 general meeting minutes.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the January 16th, 2023 general meeting minutes. Do we have a second, please?
I'll second that.
Councilmember Taylor seconds it. And so it's been moved and seconded to approve the general meeting minutes for January 16th. They've been previously distributed. Do any members of the public wish to make any additions or corrections to the minutes as they are have been posted? So raise your hand online or in the room. Or give a few people here in the room. Okay, seeing none, do any council members wish to make any additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, are there any objections to unanimous approval? Okay, seems to be no objections. As usual, minutes are right up to snuff. So hearing none, the motion's passed with unanimous consent. The minutes are approved from January. Next item is mayor's request for agenda changes. I have no suggestion to change the agenda, reorder of anything. Do any council members have any reason to suggest a reordering or any change in the agenda? Okay, well then the agenda is set. And we'll move on to committee, staff reports. And we have reports tonight from the Gustavus Visitor Association, the Disposal and Recycling Center. The city treasurer has his monthly financials and quarterly report, and the city administrator has a general meeting report. So we'll begin first with the Gustavus Visitors Association, and Leah Oaken is here this evening joining us. Leah.
Adjust it. Haven't perfected the art of glasses and masks without steaming up. And so I'm wondering if I can extend this far enough. No, I can't. Okay.
Oh, we can probably get you a little more slack there. You can, or you
all
can
right. Put it on. Because what I'll do is I'm going to take my muscle, because as soon as I put my glasses down, I can't see what anything I'm doing.
However you're comfortable.
All right. just while I'm speaking. Okay.
We know exactly how you feel. I'm fogged up yourself.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. It's nice to be here in person. So at the work session, Mr. Mayor asked if or said he would look forward to an update on the visitation bookings that we have for this coming 2023 season. And this is coming on the heels of the last city council meeting where David Olney jumped on the meeting and let us know that he's been seeing or has been hearing as well, but that there's been quite a few cancellations in group bookings in the Hyatt in Hawaii. And I think he was also implying that he's maybe seen some cancellations in bookings at the Bear Track Inn possibly as well. But he wanted to let people know that there's a possibility of a low summer season or cancellations that might be happening this 2023 summer season. So with that, I then sent out a survey to 15 accommodations and lodges just to find out how their bookings are looking this year so far and what their capacity is and how many visitors they had last year. So the main question there is, you know, what are their bookings looking like this year? So the good news, well, the good news or the good news? The good news is that out of those, we basically had 7 that were saying that they're really good. So I'll just kind of read them off. So the Annie Mae, as you know, they've changed their operating structure and their clientele base. So it's difficult for them to have a read. They haven't got a comparison really because they're having a whole different system. So Glacier Bay Country Inn said it was good, better than 2022. Glacier Bay Getaway said that that they're new to this and don't really have anything to compare it to at the moment. The Benches said it's that they're poor, lower than 2022. The Benches are, just to give you a little explanation here, they're an Airbnb. They have a capacity of 2. So, and this could be a sweeping statement here, but generally, people who are seeking for a more affordable accommodation fly by the seat of their pants and they're a little bit slow on booking. So that doesn't surprise me that they're a little slow on bookings at the moment. Blue Bucket is good, better than 2022. Fairweather Adventures, when the survey went out, he said average, about the same as 2022. On further conversation today, he said, although he's sold out in the main chunk of the peak season. So that's good. And Chinook Lodge, better than 2022. Kate Besser, it says average. Again, they have a capacity of 4. Glacier Bay Lodge, quote, sales of Glacier Bay Lodge look solid for 2023. On pace for this time last year, we have already sold out for a handful of dates in late July and early August. And they have, last year, just to let you know, 2022, they had 4,398 guests. So that kind of gives you an idea of their capacity. So their word was they look solid for 2023. Anglers Inn, bookings are good this year for the heart of the season and fair for late August and early September. And I also heard that Majestic bookings are also good. So that's the good news. That's that report. Okay, will do. Thank you. So did that answer your question, Mr. Mayor?
It certainly did. That is indeed good news. So,
good news.
So let's hear the rest of your report.
Right.
You gave us a very nice report.
So I'll start with the quarterly report. So we'll zap through this. So basically, what have we been up to? So we're going to turn through, scroll to the next page, please, Kyle. And then to the next page. For the first, what I'm zapping through, in case you're not looking at a screen, for those of you who are listening on the phone, was just our mission statement and our organization structure and our funding source and our memberships. So I'm going to zap down to what we've actually been up to. So we're going to the completed to task this quarter. So that's what you should be looking at. So I'm just going to run through this. So we did our membership drive, resulted in 57 members, which was great. We also asked members if they'd like to donate above the cost of the membership, that we welcome them to do so. And I have here written that we have 7 additional donations. We actually have 13 additional donations because we still had some more donations coming in and some more memberships coming in. So that's people who are paying above and beyond the cost of the membership dues. So they're very much in support of our activities. And that's always great to hear. So we've been sending out some surveys, maintaining the Gustavus calendar events. This is really a bit of a work in progress because there's now an events calendar on social media. So we'll see if that's worth continuing on or if we should stop doing that. I'm not sure. The reason that we started was doing that events calendar was letting people in Gustavus and everywhere, all the businesses, know what's going on. So it was community events as well as general events, just so that people had a better one-stop, one-page place where they could see what events were going on in Gustavus. We've been meeting with Frostline Studios to discuss this up-and-coming film, which I'll expand a little bit on in a while here. Updating content on the website, that's a constant work in progress. Updating listings as businesses change their models or new businesses begin, we just change our website accordingly. Looking at putting together some postcards. So we have Gustavus postcards. So I've been working with artists and photographers, and again, that's still a work in progress, but we began discussions to get some Gustavus postcards going. Begun discussions to update the content of the beach kiosk. So we're going to move the beach kiosk from in front of the fuel tanks to the opposite side of the road so that you have a backdrop of the Fairweather Range, which makes a more picturesque, scenic viewpoint for people to stand in front of and take their photographs with Gustavus rather than taking a photograph with Gustavus and a fuel tank, which probably is the ugliest thing that we have here in Gustavus. So we're going to relocate that and we've had it spruced up. Lou Cassioba has repainted it, so it's looking good, but we want to redo the content of it and make it more Gustavus feel, because right now the content is Glacier Bay National Park and it's Find Your Park. Whereas, they're already here, so they'll find the park. But let's give them some information about Gustavus, some historical information. Where did Gustavus get its name? We're also going to have Sean Nelson put together an image of the Fairweather Range with the mountains and the height of the mountains and the distance from that viewpoint that those mountains actually are. So they get kind of an idea of, why is that mountain not very big? Well, because it's so much further back than the other one, that sort of thing. So we're going to, we'll do some historical aspects. I've yet to speak to Wayne, but if he's listening, I'm going to be speaking to Wayne about the Chukanady aspect and see, so it's really all encompassing Gustavus focused based. Updating the content of the kiosk. So that's in the works. So we've begun that process. With the marketing technician, Brian has been tested and proof and concept of individualized member reports, scoped out in the implementation. So the goal here is, you know, we have Google Analytics. We can look at how much traffic is coming through the GVA site and being directed to businesses. So we act as a directory. So a go through where people can jump onto the GVA site and see what activities are available, who's doing what, and then from there they then navigate to the business or accommodation or service of interest that they were looking for. So we want to find out, you know, how many people have gone through us to find them. We also want the businesses to find out how many people have gone through us to find them, because then that directly correlates that a benefit to being a part of the visitor association. So we're putting together portals where the businesses can generate their own reports of the analytics to find out for themselves how much traffic is being navigated through the GVA to their site and the demographics of that traffic. And then also Facebook and Instagram and social media. We've started addressing more of our marketing on social media, and that's going to be a big push for this next coming goals and objectives. So with that, the next few pages are the analytics. Actually, we can turn a page. Go ahead. How am I doing on time? Okay.
All right. We'll give you a little extra time.
Give you a little extra time. Okay.
Ask you extra questions.
So basically, I'll direct your attention, if you can see a screen, rather than all of that. Just go ahead and look at that bottom left-hand corner. You can see how that squiggly line goes up. Well, that's an improvement. Drastic improvement over time. So you can see how we're improving. So go ahead and go to the next page. So these next few pages are the Google Analytics. So we're constantly looking at how are we doing, how can we do better, where are our demographics. So this is a way that we can monitor our accomplishments, and we can directly see where we need to improve, where we need to redirect, so that we can get the best organic traffic. So that's getting visitors, getting clicks, getting conversions without spending money is the goal. Otherwise, you have to spend money, which is then, you know, the non-organic route, which then gets more expensive. So it's a constant, you know, looking at the reports and looking at the analytics on how are people finding us? What are they looking for? And are they finding what they're looking for when they find us? So that's what we've been up to. And then what are our goals and objectives for our next fiscal year 24? So let's go on to that, if we could. Please, Kyle.
Page 10.
So this is... Okay, is this the marketing plan that you're on now?
On page 10, goals and objectives.
Oh, goals and objectives. Oh, well, we could do that, which is part of the marketing plan. All right, goals and objectives, same, really. So goals and objectives for, these are actually the goals and objectives for the next quarter, whereas the marketing plan is the goals and objectives for the next year. So in brief, the goals and objectives for the next quarter is reaching out through emails, social media, to gather content and footage. So this is something which you're going to see coming up. We've got this film that we're going to make. Sean Nielsen did a wonderful film for us about 3 years ago now. And it's about 6 minutes. And then he did several short versions of the longer version, so we can use it for different marketing applications. And it was wonderful. And we're utilizing it, and it's on our homepage that people can click on. And people look at photos and look at images and look at videos more than they read all the content. So we're finding that it's very important to have the videos and the images. So we have one film, but when you click on Ketchikan or Haynes or Skagway, they have a whole host of little short videos for people to click on and get a feel of the community and get a feel of the activities or get a feel of the services or, you know, to find out about that town. So we are looking to create, it's kind of like a storyboard of films that will be all encompassing of Gustavus. About 5 years ago, the GVA hired a marketing organization called the Cedar Group, based in Juneau, to come over and interview various people in Gustavus to find out how can we better market Gustavus. And one of the take-home things which they came up with from speaking to people, they asked the people that they interviewed, what is Gustavus's story? And they found that when they asked this to the Gustavians, that they struggled to really come up with something. So when this marketing organization came back to me, they said, you don't really have a Gustavus story. You need to work on that. You need to work on, you know, what is it about Gustavus that is unique? You know, everybody around here has mooses, bears, and mountains, but what's it about Gustavus that people love about Gustavus? What's the Gustavus story? So that's really been something that's been stuck in my mind, and I'm hoping we can encompass the Gustavus story into this storyboard and this film that we've got coming up. So with that, I want to encourage or extend to Gustavus and all businesses to contribute either their voice or images and be a part of the making of this film. So that end result is something which we're all happy with, that we all feel represents Gustavus, and something which is encompassing of the character and the story of Gustavus. So this is not just about fishing or kayaking. This is about Gustavus, what's unique. So that's what we're trying to captivate in this upcoming film that we're putting together, and story and short films about Gustavus. So that's kind of the chunk of our marketing for this next coming year, and the chunk of what our funds are requesting for as well. So moving the kiosk and going back to those goals and objectives, gather more content. I'm just going to jump through some bullet points, update our map and brochure. That's an annual. Postcards, mailing out newsletters, continuing to inform Gustavus as to things that they wanted to know that they didn't even know that they wanted to know about Gustavus and what's going on. Adding nearby communities onto our website and linking ourselves to our nearby communities of what events are they doing and how can we link our events to their events and advertise them so they can advertise us. Create a blog on our site and continue building the brand of Gustavus, both digitally through our content production, social media, blogs, maps, and brochure, and physically moving the sign, updating contents, collaborating, and the beautification efforts. Continue to generate the GVA community bulletins. Yeah, that's why I've written that already. So building partner bridges between neighbor communities. So same thing. So that's the objectives for the next quarter. And really that's sort of, I've pretty much given you the overview of what we got coming up. The only thing that's added onto the strategic initiatives for the ongoing 2023 year is looking at green initiatives of working with the library, working with the DRC, hoping to build some sustainable green initiatives for Gustavus, creating itineraries that are based around the Alaska Marine Highway System. So that's kind of the overview. So before I run out of time, I just wanted to zap onto the money side of things, because really that's what it all comes down to. And what I want to highlight here is that our request bottom line. So what we're requesting here is 36,000. What we requested last year was 35,600. In last year's request, we had budgeted 12,000 for this promotional video. Well, after we were speaking to Frostline Studios about how much things actually really cost, and the reality is that it's more than 12,000. It's looking more between 20 and 25,000. We're hoping to get it to 20,000 because we're hoping to get some airline mile donations to get them to fly over here. We're hoping to get somebody to donate accommodation so we don't have to pay for that. If we can't get airline miles and we can't get accommodation donation, that'll bump it up to more like 25,000 instead of 20,000. So what we're asking for in this year is an additional 13,000 on top of the 12,000 that we asked for last year, because the budget line of what this production is going to cost is between 20 and 25,000. So that's the chunk of what we're asking for. And then the other items on this list. So just to run through the costs of some of those things, how much does it cost to do those goals and objectives? I just want to run through this so you have an idea. Just to move that sign from in front of the fuel tanks to the other side of the road, Elm has given us a quote of $2,500 for sign upgrades and image upgrades of the content of the kiosk. Is $500. Sean Nilsson's going to be running around and doing some photo shoots for some of the accommodations as well to update their listings, and that's going to cost an additional $500. Social media campaigns, $500. Postcards, production and printing, $1,000. And then we're going to do an art mural incentive, lack of a better word, underneath the Salmon River Bridge. We've got some graffiti, and we're hoping to deter the continuation of graffiti by having some of the Gustavus kids under a project manager of maybe a couple of artists to work together with some kids to create murals underneath that bridge that will deter graffiti people from drawing over the top of, because these are kids that we know and they've put their heart and soul into creating something which is fun. So when the fishermen go underneath the bridge doing their fly fishing, that they're seeing a fun Gustavus created mural from the kids rather than looking at graffiti. So that incentive there was going to cost, with supplies and a project manager, of about $1,000. So that's just to run through some of the costs of things that we're spending and buying. And additional costs are our usual Alaska Travel Industry Association memberships and, you know, Travel Alaska memberships, so those kind of memberships. So our bottom line, what we're asking for, is our bottom line. I could have requested more and played that game of saying, well, if we ask for more and we get less, well, that's actually what we needed. I haven't played that game. You know, in view of transparency, what we're asking for is our bottom line of actually what we need. So we can't do those things if we don't get that money. If we got more money, we could obviously do a lot more things, and we would put it into more marketing and get more of a return for investment and to Gustavus. But our bottom line budget request is, you know, what our bottom line is to do the things that which we our goals and objectives for this next fiscal year. Thank you.
Yes. Do any council members have any clarifying questions for Leah? Anybody on council members online? Hey, I'm not seeing. Oh, yes, Janine.
So, Leah, I looked at the your website recently, and it looks great. But I was wondering, I was just pretending I was a visitor going, okay, so I'm coming to Gustavus. And I noticed the talks about places to stay. It talks that there's a grocery store, but it doesn't mention anything about places to eat. And I'm wondering if it's because it's only members, or why there's that gap.
There is a whole page on dining. Did you find that?
I missed it.
Missed okay. it, yes. Uh-huh. So jump back on the site and have a look at dining. Click on dining. So when you go to it's listed under, there's one section that says things to do in Gustavus, and it has by land, by sea, and by, I remember now.
By air, okay.
By air. So when you look at by land, when you click on by land, it then shows you the galleries, and it shows dining.
Okay.
So shopping, galleries, dining. Yeah, so that's where it's at. So it's a whole page of the dining. However, I'm glad you brought that up, though. That is an area of concern this coming year. We have a very limited amount of dining opportunities, and every year it's a challenge. And with the anime changing their operation, I think it's just going to be another loss of a dining opportunity. So I'm not sure what the Cottonwood Cabins is going to do with their dining opportunity. They're planning on opening something this year, but I don't know what that's going to look like just yet.
Thank you.
Councilmember Owens.
I was just wondering, what is the change that the anime is making?
Thank you. The change that anime is making is that they're no longer a full service accommodation. They're going to be catering to independent travelers. So if somebody who comes in and has they're going to get their own rental car. So when you look at their site, it lists all of the services and it lists all of the activities that people can independently book. Whereas previously they were a full service, somebody would phone the anime and the anime would book their taxis, would book their rental car, would book their services, their kayaking, their Glacier Bay tour, their fishing excursion. They'd rent, they would drive them from their accommodation to the dock so that they could go fishing. They're taking out all of those services. So they're no longer going to be driving and ferrying people around. So people have to go and book their own rental car or book their own taxi. And they have to find out what services are available and book their own activities and services. They'll be no longer offering dining, a dining room. They have in their rooms a microwave and a couple of small things, but people will need to bring their own food to cook in the microwave. And there's a couple of the rooms have, very basic cooking facilities that people can be independent. But they're no longer having a dining room. You're welcome.
Okay, any other questions of the GVA? Okay, I'd have to say it's perhaps the most comprehensive report that you guys have produced that I recall. So thank you very much. It's very helpful to me. So
thank
you. I'm glad to hear the bookings look strong.
Oh, I do. I would like to add another item that Jim and Julian are going to be coming up here and speaking about the dock. And the GVA, we had a board meeting today, and the GVA is in full support of improvements to the dock facility. Much of our activities, the fishing activities and people coming in off their own vessels, there's a lot of the visitor activities happen around the dock. So the safety of the dock and the wind, when the wind blows, that it's a very unsafe situation. So the GVA is in support of improvements to the safety of the dock.
Okay, thank you. And we'll move then on to Disposal and Recycling Center quarterly report. Paul Berry.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
We do.
Very good. Good evening. I hope you all have had a chance to read my report that's posted online and in the packet. I've tried to put all the relevant information in there. I'm sure there's more details, especially, with what Ian's been doing for the last month or two. But I just wanted to kind of put in the succinct points, including the equipment repairs. As a reluctant mechanic in all of my time at the DRC. I'm just always in constant delight and amazement with Ian's willingness to do some really significant repairs on the machinery. And I think the city may be seeing it, you know, more expenses than usual in the equipment maintenance category. And a lot of that is because it's kind of deferred maintenance. You know, I always did enough to kind of keep it going, but I think he's got a really good idea of preventive maintenance and just kind of keeping the equipment in a really good condition. So I'm really, really pleased with that. I wanted to, and I put in there about the shipping rate increases, just so, you know, people can get an idea that we are going to be spending more on shipping, that, you know, with inflation and stuff like that, well, and the decreased value of what we ship, that, you know, we'll probably be spending more just shipping the same amount, just because of the combination of low value and higher shipping costs. So that's just kind of a reality. And I was really, really excited to learn about the electronics product stewarded ship in Alaska and learn about that. It's actually one of my colleagues with Zender, Lynn Zender, who's been active on that and presented it to the Alaska chapter of SWANA, the Solid Waste Association of North America, at their meeting, their quarterly meeting last month. And that's where I really learned about that. And that's, that will help us in terms of keeping the shipping costs of one of our most expensive items, e-waste, lower. I think that, so that's, I'm very hopeful. Well, I hope that the legislature, I mean, I don't believe they've introduced the bill yet, but I hope the legislature is receptive. But, you know, it's passed in a lot of red states. So I think it's, you know, it's good across the aisle. There's a lot of support for product stewardship. And I also put in there for the community chest, Tricia Dawson's proposal for credit card merchant service proposal. And I haven't gone through that with Annie yet, but I think that's, it's a good proposal. And we'll see if the volunteer staff of the chest is ready to make that leap. And then of course, you know, if they are, if Ian is willing to, you know, kind of help administrate, I don't think it would be that much, but it is one more kind of a daily task to kind of follow up on it and making sure everything is in order, kind of like the point of sale system at the recycling center, the DRC proper. You know, it does take daily maintenance just to make sure everything's in order. But I think a credit card merchant system and a kind of an iPad cash register would really help in terms of ringing up sales and kind of being more uniform in that. I was really pleased that Tricia came forward with that proposal. So in capital projects, I brought up again the groundwater monitoring well project, because there is two wells that would be good to replace. I don't think it's a super high expense. It's just something that kind of needs to stay moving so that we can record, or so we can report data as far as what's in the groundwater there on our downgradient wells that are going dry because of isostatic rebound. So that's kind of an important project. And then I touched on the big three projects. And my gratitude to Kathy, our city administrator, for really helping shuttle through the Swiffer grant for the composting yard improvements. She's really taken a very active stance in that. And I think we've got a really good proposal with the work from Solstice Consulting as far as putting the grant package together and just follow through on the city's end. I think this is a good proposal in terms of having everything in order and, you know, making a really solid thing. So I really hope that comes through. It's a big expenditure, but as I said, you know, I was talking about the scoping document in, I guess that was December, you know, anytime you're involving concrete and labor and a municipal project, things get expensive. The only thing I really didn't mention in in my report that I wanted to bring up about the septic planning thing, and I had alerted John Barry to this, is how the development of the septic project in the south area of the DRC affects the landfill development plan, which is kind of our long-term plan for how much area we have for depositing solid waste into the far future, the near and far future. So I alerted John to that plan just so he could, you know, kind of adjust or be aware of some of the placement of things and how that impacts, you know, how much waste we will be able to place on the DRC acreage as time goes on, to just kind of keep that in mind going forward, is that, you know, any developments in that area, I mean, that is a logical place for having the septage processing, but how that affects our long-term disposal capacity of the DRC proper. Other than that, I don't really have any updates on any of these projects or anything. If there's any questions or anything, I'd be happy to take them.
Thanks for the very comprehensive report. That was quite a bit of troubleshooting you had to go through on the podcast. Congratulations to you and Ian for success on that. I am really pleased that you're looking carefully at maintaining the stuff that we have. That's how we keep things from getting run down. Something I seem to understand more and more. But thanks for that. Okay, I guess no other questions that I missed. Well, thanks, Paul, for your report and for being with us tonight. We'll move on then to our city treasurer, monthly financials and quarterly report. Treasurer, Danny Savage.
Thank you, Mike. Did I understand that Kyle's running the? Okay.
See, I didn't have my microphone on, but.
So anyways, as far as my quarterly report goes, I tried to be brief. The job of the treasurer has so many facets that I wasn't really 100% sure where to get started. So I tried to just update everybody on the more important things I thought were currently going on, like the budget process, the endowment fund grants, capital improvement plan. Everything in there I think is pretty self-explanatory. And if anybody has any questions about what I put in there, I'd be happy to clarify on that. But if Kyle, if you could move the to the financial reports, if you could go to the unencumbered funds more. One more. Okay. So this report is.
Yeah, sorry, Ben. There's just like, there's a little bit of a delay. Sorry about that. No it problem. Takes a little while from the time I turn the page.
Okay, great. This report has been missing from the financial reports back to my predecessor. I think it wasn't being kept up on, but I have gone through and put in the current figures to get it updated. And so this will be a report that you guys will see from now on with the monthly reports. And so I just thought I'd go real quickly through what it is you're looking at. So in case anyone needs that. So the top box is basically money that we have out there that we have not yet received, but that we have invoiced for, or like the first column, delinquent sales tax, things like that. It's a pretty small number, $22,000. The ambulance transport billing is actually money that we've already received. We just don't know where to allocate it yet. So it's not, most of that money isn't money we're waiting on. It's just money we don't know where to put. The main box is our unrestricted funds balance. And so the first figure, the 1.2 million, that is currently what we have in our checking account. And then all of the red numbers are the amounts of money that we have restricted for or encumbered for specific projects, mainly capital projects, and then a few other things. And then the unrestricted funds being the balance at the bottom at $952,000. The third box is pending transfers. Those are the NCOs you guys will talk about tonight. So that'll constantly be in flux. And then the fourth box is really where we'd like to be. So by having $1.27 million in the bank and $952,000 of it unrestricted, that's really not what we intend. We intend to be closer to the $317,000 or $444,000, somewhere in there. We are in the middle of the year, so we will kind of stay high because we'll still be pulling from those funds to pay for salaries and things like that as we go forward. But next general meeting, I'll be introducing an NCO to try to bring that $952,000 down to a more reasonable amount, somewhere in the 45 to 35% range. So unless anybody has any questions, that's more or less what I wanted to talk about. But Shelley?
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Councilmember Shelley.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was wondering, and Mr. Mayor, I hope to talk about the Wilson Road issue, maybe during council comment, but I was wondering, what is the implication that Wilson Road drainage has no obligated funds?
So the funds that were originally obligated for that project were used, and then the project itself has exceeded the amount of money that was allocated for it. And so that's why it's at zero, because it's actually at like negative $19,000. But for the purpose of this report, the zero was the proper number to have there.
Mayor, could I ask another question? On the page 32, the first page, profit and loss budget, and under the federal revenue up at the top, I was wondering about the two funds, the sources of funding, the American Rescue Plan Act and the ARPA funds. Do we anticipate that those, what is the duration of that funding? Are we going to see funds like that in future years from the federal government that you know of?
I don't believe that we'll see any more ARPA funds. I think that we've received all the ARPA funds we're going to receive.
Okay.
To my knowledge.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for our treasurer, Councilmember Taylor?
Thank you, if I could. So, I mean, speaking to how you mentioned, we obviously having an extra $600,000 sitting in checking, not super ideal. I guess maybe this isn't exactly the venue for this, but I'm curious, if it's not in checking, do we have, or can you give me like a ballpark on a rate that we get when that's in savings? Is that something where we're, for sitting a month, we're not going to make like $5,000 or $6,000 in interest for that being? I mean, I know there are accounts right now with the fixed income market being as well off as it is. Like I'm making 3.6% in my personal savings account. So just wondering, I guess there's a reason to delay that even a month if it's going to be that big of a interest payment to the city, or if that's not something that we see in the account that we have, because I just don't have a clear picture of that.
Right. So the city doesn't have a savings account. We have our AMLIP accounts. Gotcha. And so the AMLIP accounts obviously would be a better interest bearing account than our checking account. Gotcha. As far as the timeline for moving it, because of policy and procedure, we have to go through the NCO process to move it. So
yeah, great. Yeah. AMLIP. Good reminder of that. Thank you.
Right.
And I'll ask a follow-up to, I think I'm correct that we need a substantial amount in checking because that's what we pay our day-to-day bills and things out of too. So what we have a policy of keeping a certain minimum in there for, so that we're able to cover unexpected things that come up quickly and that sort of thing. It's really our top line of, our top line backup for our operations. So so that's why we try to keep that operating expense in the 25 to 35% of the budget. But yeah, the rest of it we should move into an interest-bearing account. We do that routinely.
And I didn't realize until I started going over this report that it's actually a resolution was passed stating that we should be doing this. Not that I like, oh, what a good idea, but like, no, this is the process. So now that I'm more familiar with how that all works, I'll get it in the works.
And that's a sort of a standard recommendation. I've forgotten where it actually came from, but maybe from our auditors or others that that we should be keeping that amount in our checking ready to use if we need it. So it shows that we're well covered for our expenses as they occur. Okay, any other questions for our treasurer? Anybody online or from the council? No, okay, well, thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate the report as always. And I would like to go on to City Administrator Kathy Leary. Busy as always. He doesn't need to go home for dinner.
So like Ben said, we're continuing with our budget preparations, and he's been working with the departments to prepare their individual and capital and their operating budgets. And he'll be working and continues to work with Mike and I in the marine facilities, roads, and admin budgets. John Barry has submitted the permit application and permit fee to Department of Environmental Conservation for the septage holding system. And so once that is approved, we could move forward with the tanks purchase and transport. And we hope, if all goes well, that we'll be able to transport those and get out the RFQ for installation this spring. We have a window that we have to do it in when the groundwater is not so high. And so we're shooting for hopefully like a May construction project on that if all works out well. We just completed today our third round of, as Paul was mentioning, the editing for the Swiffer grant, which is the solid waste reduction for the compost building, the new compost building at the landfill. The budget's been finalized, and I've been getting letters of support from various organizations and congressional delegation. And some have come in. We're still waiting on one or two, but they can apparently be submitted outside of the application directly to the EPA. I did say if any council members want to review it, but we're submitting it tomorrow. So it's a little bit, the deadline's the 15th, but we want it in there the 14th to make sure we have no technology issues or anything like that. So unless you want to read it tonight, it's pretty much final. but we have gone through it with a fine tooth comb. So for the Good River Bridge, we accepted the reduced cost adjustments from DOT, which brought their initial estimate down considerably from their first estimate. And now we're just waiting for what they call the final SSE cost from their planners and engineers, which is the scope, schedule, and estimate. You have a resolution before you tonight to approve, which will be needed to move this project forward and for scoring purposes. Just to explain a little bit, in order to get our scoring up, we have to come up with a minimum of 9.03% match, but with that extra 1% match in there, we get a higher weighted score overall for our grant application. So we're hoping that resolution will be approved tonight. The Marine Facilities Coordinator position has been through several edits, and it's before you for approval. If it's approved tonight, we can post it tomorrow, and then hopefully whoever we hire can be hired by the end of March or the beginning of April, so they have some time for a little, sort of mentoring and learning how to do the job before it breaks wide open for the spring and the summer. We have included some additional maintenance items for the city, which are really needed for us. I am in the process of finalizing an agreement with Byte Network to install the fiber optic cable. We were going to meet with them last week, but I was kind of sick. So we're going to meet with them hopefully later this week. We still have some details to work out to get that finalized. We don't intend to give up this one over here until we know that that one is working regularly and properly. And the library will not be included in that because they have a higher bandwidth use and they have an E-rate pricing structure for which they get subsidized. So it would be for us, the fire hall, and the DRC. I'm heading to the Alaska Municipal League Winter Legislative Fly-In next week, where we'll be meeting with legislators on our projects and priorities. And additionally, I hope to have some meetings with some other departments such as DOT and ADEC while I'm there. And just today, the discretionary spending notification came out, which is the discretionary spending you can apply to our congressional delegation through Senator Murkowski's office. They've announced the notice of intent to be able to apply for funds for that. So that's where we're looking at putting the DRC recycling building and a couple of other projects perhaps in there. So we're busy working on trying to get our stuff funded. And I can answer any questions anybody has.
Any questions for our city administrator? Councilmember Owens.
Hey, thank you, Administrator. I was real interested in Paul Berry's description of the electronic product stewardship and the legislation. It's on page 26 of the packet, and Paul's
The electronic stewardship, yes.
Yeah, for funding for collecting and transporting e-waste, electronic waste. And I don't think it's been introduced yet. I didn't see it on the list, and I didn't see it on the AML watch list. I'm just wondering, when you go to Juno to meet with them about their legislative priorities, if you could take this with us and say that, I don't know whether it's true of all members, but that we may have an interest in legislation. I don't know whether, it looks like on the board of directors, they've got two people from ADEC from, and also one from AT&T. So I'm sure they're looking, shopping for their own legislator, but I'd be interested so that we can choose to support it, or you perhaps file a resolution if they do get go forward with it.
So we want to encourage their support. Is what you're
I don't know that we're ready to say that. I mean, I am, but I don't think that we've had a discussion about it yet. I just would like to let you let them know that that we at least have an interest in it.
Okay.
I don't know whether I could speak for the rest of us that we have an interest in it. It looks very promising. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And the mayor is nodding.
Yep. We can do that.
Thank you.
Any other questions for our city administrator? Oh, yes, Councilmember Driscoll.
So this is, he was talking about potentially using the using credit cards at the community chest. Will it need to have internet?
Yeah, well, yes, or Wi-Fi, yes. It'll need to have something if we go there with it. I'm hoping that we can look at something as simple as one of those square things. If the volunteers, the volunteers still haven't decided, you know, like Annie hasn't gotten the nod from the volunteers yet, which are kind of the basis of that place. So, and I also haven't talked to Paul yet, but I want to find out if we can somehow integrate it so that we can have a minimum charge. Like, it's not going to do us any good to run credit cards for $1.50 items. So there's a lot to think about with this whole thing, but I imagine, yes, that it would need internet.
Okay, because I was just seeing about the bite thing and whether that was just, it's a detail, I guess, in terms of if they're going to do credit card, they're going to need some kind of internet.
Okay.
It looks like Paul's still on. And Paul, I'm sorry, as I was thanking you for your report, and I realized my microphone was off. So I apologize for that. I did appreciate your report. Would you like to add anything on the credit card machine?
That's one of the details that I hadn't, I mean, I kind of assumed it's like operating your cell phone. So as long as you have a number and a data plan, you know, you're basically have access to the internet through that means. That's, and the community chest being as close as it is to AT&T's tower, I mean, it has excellent reception. So I have assumed, and you know the danger of assumptions, that it would just be using a cell phone connection to connect to the internet and to do that. But that, it, I haven't, that is one of the issues I haven't totally thought out. So that is a very good question.
Okay, thank you for that. Oh, Okay. Any other questions then for our city administrator? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Kathy. I can tell you she's been very busy. I appreciate her every day. Okay, that brings to an end our staff reports, regular staff reports for this month. We move on to public comment on non-agenda items. And this public comment period is for non-agenda items only, and we don't get involved in discussion back and forth on them. So if you'd like to make public comment on a non-agenda item at this time, if you're in the room, you can raise your hand and or click on the participants icon online and then the hand icon to raise your hand. And if you don't have that option, please unmute your phone and the clerk will add you to the list and remute you until it's your turn to speak. State your full name before speaking and refrain from speaking if your comments have already been addressed by another speaker. And of course, we'll be respectful in our language. And we'll have another opportunity at the end of the meeting for more public comment on non-agenda items. So do any members of the public, and see Jim Kearns is here in the audience to speak. Jim, welcome. Would you step to the microphone up here and hit the little button on the bottom panel there of the microphone and it'll go on.
Little red things to show.
There you are.
So my name is Jim Kearns, and I'm here to just comment on something. Maybe, well, I was talking with Leah about it today, but one of the big problems that we have in our city is the dock. And it's just, everybody knows. I mean, all of you that have been down there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We have no wave barrier that will protect us. And I know we've talked about this. I've talked about it many times. But also I heard that we were thinking about doing something with the infrastructure money that was coming from President Biden's program. But anyway, so I am just encouraging us to get on the stick and get something done down there so we can get a wave barrier. We got some great ideas, and I've had lots of ideas, as you guys remember. But anyway, just to note, there was actually a diagram, and I think, Mike, you were here when they first posted that one originally, where they had a wave barrier that came across the front where the ferry terminal, where the ferry lays up against. And I even talked to the DOT people about it, because it was one of my students in Juneau, as his dad. So anyway, it's a great idea. It's something that we really, really need. And the dock is just an unsafe place for people to operate, whether you're doing your own private stuff, whether you have a charter boat business, whether you're trying to operate a kayak off there. We all know it's a problem and certainly needs to be addressed, and I'd be glad to help out in any way that I can. So thank you very much.
Jay, any questions for Jim Kearns on this item that we have heard from him before on, and we appreciate the
might hear again
the steady the steady drumbeat of keeping the awareness up. Any questions? I guess not, but thank you.
Okay, thank you
for coming in. Okay, any other members of the public wishing to make public comment on a non-agenda item? Not seeing any hands coming up online. So, okay, I guess we'll move on, and there'll be, again, another opportunity at the end of the meeting. If something comes to mind and you'd like to speak up, please do then at the end of the meeting. That takes us to the consent agenda. And we have three items on the consent agenda. The first is our monthly certificate of records destruction, a very important task that our city clerk does, and it's tedious going through these things and determining which things are due to be removed from the records and what has to stay, and making sure our records are all in order. And she does a great job on this, and I really appreciate it. So this is the items that she has determined for this month that will are due to be removed from the records per our record keeping policy. And then there is the Gustavus Marine Facilities Coordinator position description, which we have done some editing from the original one that was last in use when Ben Sadler occupied the position. And we took input from Ben, and he and the city administrator worked up a few edits to the position to describe it a little better. And it's been in the packet. We had a look at it at our work session. So I think the council is fairly familiar with it, and we put it on the consent agenda, and it's in the packet. And then the last one is introduction of an NCO. Recall that when we do a financial transfer, we have to do it as a non-code ordinance, because it's an ordinance. We introduce it 1 month, schedule for public hearing the next month, and then take action on it on that time. And this one's pretty routine. It includes a couple of just a couple of return items from projects that we've completed. As you know, we generally put a little extra money when we are into a project capital account for when we're authorizing the project and funding it, to make sure that we cover all, you know, any little changes and so forth. And we end up with a little extra at the end. And then at that, when the project's closed out, we can move that back into our capital improvement long-term savings in the AMLIP account. So there are two of those for the DRC pre-processing storage area that's finished. We're moving 10,000 left over from that back. And the DRC hazardous waste facility, moving 9,930 bucks on that back. So 20,627 goes into the AMLIP improvement long-term savings account to be recycled into other projects. So those are the three items on the consent agenda. And I would like to call on Council Member Jim Muscoviac for a motion to approve the consent agenda, please.
I move the council approve the consent agenda.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Councilmember Muscoviac, seconded by Councilmember Owens to approve the consent agenda and those three items that I listed. Do any members of the public wish to have any item removed from the consent agenda? I should have asked for that first, and I didn't do that. And if you did have something you wanted to discuss or move into new business, we could do that. But, okay. And do any council members have anything they wish to move off of that consent agenda? Okay, good. And then we're back in order. Now we're to where I should have asked for the motion, but thank you. We're okay anyway. So it's been moved and seconded. Are there any objections to adopting the consent agenda by unanimous consent? Okay, hearing none, the consent agenda is passed by unanimous consent. And we'll move on to ordinance for public hearing. And that takes us to item number 9, which is an NCO that we introduced last month. And it's to fund the library bike shed introduction of funding for the library bike shed. I'm going to turn to my spot in the packet here. And so this is ordinance FY23-13 NCO. And I'll begin with a motion from Council Member Lewis to adopt this NCO. And then we'll go to a public hearing on it.
All right, I move to adopt FY23 dash.
Point of order.
We have a point of order from the council.
Okay.
I think I may have got out here in my steps here.
Mayor Taylor, you need to open it for public hearing first.
Okay. Did
you not want to call on the librarians?
I'll give an introduction here. I was jumping ahead to a motion when I should have given my introduction first, so, and then public hearing. So the library bike shelter has been in our capital improvement plan for a number of years, and it was promoted by our librarians some years ago and approved for inclusion in the capital improvement plan for the city. And from librarians over the years had done some work on this. Our two present librarians just last year took the initiative to begin really to push this forward so we could get it done. And I very much appreciate that. We last year decided, rather than have in general our department heads managing construction projects, that we would move them into what's essentially the public works function here in City Hall, which for the most part comprises the city administrator, the mayor, and for many of our projects are a contracted project manager, John Berry, PE. So we took the project into public works and took the recommendations of the librarians for the sort of general outlook or the general shape of this facility. They had drawings and so forth, and we took those to our design consultant, PND Engineering. They developed the plans per the specifications that we gave them as the city for this bike shelter, and with the intent that it also could be used as a sheltered place for people to use the Wi-Fi. It would be close enough to the Wi-Fi that rather than crowding into that snow shed roof on the side door to the library and blocking access in and out of that, they would have a more suitable place along the parking area that's also the bike shelter or shed. So we had PND develop the 100% design. We ran that design through the fire marshal's office to get their approval and got that just in the last month. And John Berry is our assigned project manager. He has he has developed the request for a quotation, which is ready to go out tomorrow for this project. And our hope is to construct it this spring during the driest time of year. The concrete footers on this design go about 5 feet down into the ground to provide the resistance in case we have high winds. It's a standard part of the design for this. So we want to make sure that we're able to construct this during the driest time of year, which would be late spring. That's our plan. So the location is near the existing bike rack on a slight extension of a pad that we extended for parking on the west side of the parking lot. It should be a substantial shelter, very well designed, and will hold up for a long, long time without worry about snow load or anything like that. Should be very low maintenance, and I think it'll be a very useful structure for many years, and will meet the need of people that bike to the library. So that's my introduction. I'd like to call on our two librarians, if they would like to add any thoughts on this. I should note that we have thought about whether this shelter could be used for library-related activities beyond the bike parking and the Wi-Fi use, such as story hour if you wanted to do it outside, and weather was not so great, then that could be done in that shelter. And yes, that sort of use would be certainly possible, consistent with, you know, other uses of it. And so there may be some other additional uses that the librarians would put this structure to use. It's always nice to have a roof. Seems like we can always find a use for another roof, and this would be a good one. So I would like to give our two librarians, who I believe are online here, either Leanne or Jesse, an opportunity if they wanted to speak up and talk about this. Either of you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, hello. This is Jesse. Thank you, Mayor. I don't really have additional information to add. I do want to kind of highlight the idea that we are hoping to use this shelter for other things beyond parking bikes. There was a photograph that was part of the packet that was shown briefly. And I think that photograph is a really good kind of image to have in mind when thinking about the other uses of the shelter. Leanne and I have done a lot of outdoor programming, and partly because of COVID, but then also partly because we really like to do programming outdoors, and children really like it outdoors. The adults really like it outdoors, and it just worked really well for what we've been doing at the library. And so this was an example of outdoor programming when it was raining. And our only covered space is that back door area. And so we had to move our story hour under that roof a couple of times last summer. And, you know, in doing that, we block that door and we block the book drop and we block the shelves for curbside pickup. And not everybody fit under there either. There's a bunch of adults that are standing out in the rain, because they wanted to be at story hour too. So we're hoping to use that shelter for programming when it's raining, not only for children, but for adults too, as well as a place for our patrons to use the internet outside, outside of open hours. When it's raining, it would be a great place for them to sit and use the Wi-Fi. Sometimes they'll sit in that back area there, move benches, and again, block the door. So we're hoping to provide another space for that, as well as to park bikes. So we're excited about this project, you know, getting underway this spring. And Leanne is on. I don't know if she has anything else to add, but if she does, that's all I have.
I do not have anything additional to add, except just to add my excitement for the project, and that we're going to be hopefully we are very thankful for the idea of it and promise to put it to very good use.
Thank you. And I love that picture of you guys with the story hour. And do any council members have any questions of the librarians? Councilman Rollins.
I guess this is to Jesse.
You want to save questions for the librarians for council comment?
Sure, we could do that. Well, if the librarians will hold on, when we come back to council comments after public hearing, we'll have an opportunity to ask them some more questions. So, okay. So, I guess I can open this for public comment at this time. Do any members of the public wish to comment on this NCO? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody. So we'll bring it back to the, then to the council and council members. Do you, let's start with any questions you may have for the librarian, since it's their department and we're hoping that their patrons are the great beneficiaries of this.
Mike.
Oh, I'm missing something again. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So I did note the time when you opened and closed the public hearing. In
oh, minute, yes.
But you need to have a motion at this point.
Okay, we'll have, yeah, we have to have a motion before we go to public, council member comment. So I believe we have a motion scheduled for council member Lewis.
All right. I move to adopt FY23-13NCO Capital Project Funding 2023 Library Bike Shed Introduction, introduced January 16th, 2023.
Okay, do we have a second?
Sure, I'll second that.
We have a couple of seconds here. We'll show Council Member Owens is seconding the motion by Council Member Lewis to approve FY23-13 NCO capital project funding for the library bike shed as introduced last month. Okay, do any council members have any questions now for the librarian? Well, since we've had an introduction from them, Council Member Owens.
Okay, Jesse. When I was at the library, I saw some designs for alternate sites for the library or the bike shelter, and specifically on the eastern side of the parking lot, the mayor described the site location on the western side. Has that issue of site location, is that still under discussion or has it been resolved?
So Leanne, myself, and the city administrator and the mayor have been discussing it nearly every day, and it was decided that it would be built on the, east-west, on the side where the bike rack currently is. So it would have been site number one when looking at those drawings. And there were several reasons for that. One, having it on the other side and having access, students at the school having access during recess could be some liability issues. Another reason for having it where the bike rack currently is the flow from the front door to the shelter is, it makes more sense that way as well. And I may be missing something there. Maybe the mayor can chime in. There were other reasons too, I think.
Sure, maybe I'll try to answer that. You know, this was kind of a tough decision for me, and I actually came down to making a final decision on it. The librarians had pointed out that a facility of, you know, a covered facility, something like this would possibly have other utility of, say, for use during recess periods in inclement weather, if students could go over and do something in it, and that programs like Story Hour and so forth, other activities involve the students would be nice to do on the eastern side. To be sure, there would be nice to have a structure like that over there. And there were a couple of problems. Number one, as we considered where our lease lot line is, it runs quite close there to the back of the building. There's enough room, we think, to do an addition on the back of the library, on the east end of the library, in the future. And that was actually in the original plan. The library as constructed when Kathy Leary was in charge of that project, provided for possible extension there. Having a bike shed or shelter over there might hamper that or constrain our options for how that is constructed and or laid out. And it was pretty tight on the line. It might, our shelter might have gone over our lease line, which we only have a 200-foot wide piece of that track there. And so it, at the very least, it was going to crowd it, possibly extend off of our lease. So there were some issues with putting this structure over there. I also felt that it was approved by the council as primarily as a bike shelter, not as a resource use. Now, of course, if we can get extra utility out of it, that's great. But the primary use was as a bike shelter. And so it was designed with that in mind. And I felt that the location on the west side was less likely to interfere with future construction of a of an addition on the library, wouldn't constrain other landscaping over there that that linked the library to the school and so forth. Putting it on the west side, there are no conflicts really, and it's close to the door, so people coming up on their bikes can park them in the shelter and walk right in the front door instead of having to walk halfway around the building to it. So so I felt that that was the best location for it as we had originally planned it. That said, I think the librarian's ideas for a shelter to serve some of those other purposes are really excellent. And is something that we should work with the school district to develop. It might go on to the onto the school district property. Maybe the in that case, the school district probably owns it. It's possible, though, it could be funded through an endowment fund grant. But it should be a purpose-built facility to meet those academic and other activity uses rather than something designed for a bike storage. And I think it could be much more attractive for that kind of use if we did something that was designed specifically for it. So I would like to work with the, I know the school district and some members of the advisory board are interested in having some kind of shelter like that over there. So I would like to work with them to see if we can find a way to do something like that in the future that would be a better fit than the bike shelter would be. So it was a kind of a tough decision, and I know that our librarians who love to do these outdoor related things, and I think they're really valuable. And they're a little disappointed that we couldn't stretch the utility of this to pick up a few more things. But I thought it was best to stick with the original plan and get it built. So that was my decision on that one. Okay, any other questions either for the librarians or comments on this NCO that will fund the construction? If we fund it tonight, the NCO or the RFQ goes out tomorrow morning to get bids, be open for 2 weeks. Okay, I'm not seeing any more. Oh, Councilmember Taylor.
It's just a quick comment, but I would note that we had a lot of members of the public making a lot of noise on this and making comments about potentially even, you know, being able to build it for less. So I'll be interested to see how nice of quotes we get when we put the request for quotes out. See if any of that comes back that way.
Right. Well, in a couple of weeks, we'll know what the bids are, and we'll hope everything comes in well within our budget. So, okay, Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote then, please?
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Motion passes with all members in favor.
Okay, thank you. We'll try to get this project underway this spring. And that takes us to new business. A little different order on how we go through the items. So the next item on the agenda is item 10 to award gravel pit contracts. And this is our something we do annually. We've had three contractors apply to purchase gravel for resale out of our city gravel pit. And so we have a motion to approve that, those contracts. And the motion is from Councilmember Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to award pit run gravel contracts to Fairweather Construction for 7,500 cubic yards, Gustavus Landscaping for 1,500 cubic yards, and Glacier Bay Construction for 5,000 cubic yards at the price of $6 per cubic yard.
Okay, do we have a second? Well, I'll second it just to move it forward here. So it's been moved and seconded to award the gravel pit contracts for the three contractors. Could you repeat, please, the amounts and the each contractor, since I didn't write it down as you were, didn't have it in my script here. Oh, we've got it here. Okay, to award gravel contracts, Fairweather Construction for 7,500 cubic yards, Gustavus Landscaping for 1,500 cubic yards, and Glacier Bay Construction for 5,000 cubic yards at a price of $6 per cubic yard. Okay. Do we have any, is there any public comment on the award of these gravel pit contracts? Okay, seeing none, then we'll close public comment. Do any council members have any comment on this or questions? It looks pretty straightforward. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
All righty, we have all council members in favor.
Thank you. The gravel pit contracts are awarded, and we'll have a supply of gravel going for projects across the community through those three contractors. That takes us to item 11. This is a resolution, CY23-02, and as our city administrator mentioned, we have this resolution to support our grant application for funding for the repairs to the Good River Bridge. And it's targeted particularly at the Alaska Department of Transportation, through which the funding from the Federal Infrastructure Act is funneled. And so if we are successful in qualifying for funding as we are applying, then the project would be conducted as a STIP project, a state transportation improvement project, similar to that we did for the Rink Creek Bridge. And the city would pay, we are expecting a 10.09% match on the grant. But that's all we pay. We wouldn't have to pay the cost otherwise of the repairs to the bridge and the embankment correction of the embankment failure on the northwest corner. So, and Furthermore, if the state does the project for us, we don't have to manage it. So there's a lot of advantages in getting and having the state DOT do this for us if we can qualify for the funding. So I will read the, I'll start with a motion that I will make. I move to adopt resolution CY23-02 supporting repair and upkeep of the Good River Bridge. And I'll read the resolution after that. Do you have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and double seconded to approve resolution CY23-02, a resolution by the City of Gustavus supporting repair and upkeep of the Good River Bridge. And so I guess the motion was by Mayor Taylor. The second was by Councilmember Taylor and also Councilmember Muscoviac. They were sort of tied. So list them as you wish, Madam Clerk. I'll read the resolution. A resolution by the City of Gustavus supporting repair and upkeep of the Good River Bridge. Whereas there has been a bridge on the section line over Good River in Gustavus for a century since the earliest homestead days, the existing bridge being the third such structure at this site. And whereas the Good River Bridge is the sole developed access from Gustavus to several residential subdivisions, the State of Alaska Dude Creek Critical Habitat Area, key hunting areas and recreational beaches to the west of the river. And whereas the bridge is used by residents, visitors, recreational hunters, resource management staff of various state and federal agencies to access lands west of the Good River. And whereas the bridge is the sole access also to the Tidelines Institute, a new and growing ecology training and educational nonprofit on the west side of the Good River. And whereas the existing Good River Bridge was built in 1984 as a 76 feet long single lane timber structure with funding by the state. And whereas the existing Good River Bridge has served the community of Gustavus well for four decades with little maintenance. And whereas bridge inspections by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, ADOT and PF, in 2015 and 2021 have identified the need to repair weather and age-related structural element decay and the developing failure of the bridge approach embankment at the northwest corner of the bridge. And whereas the City of Gustavus values the inspection service provided by the Alaska DOT and PF bridge section and takes seriously the recommendations of the engineering professionals conducting the inspections. And whereas the city's engineering consultant PND Engineering of Juneau, Alaska confirmed recommendations of the ADOT and PF and has recommended options for repairing the bridge and stabilizing the subsiding embankment at the northwest corner. And whereas failure to repair the bridge deficiencies would cause further degradation, load limit restrictions, reduced safety, or total failure, deferred repairs or replacement would be far more expensive than responsible upkeep of this at this time. And whereas it is the policy and responsibility of the City of Gustavus to maintain its critical infrastructure in safe and fully functioning condition, to maintain service to the community, and to avoid loss or costly repair of infrastructure assets caused by lack of maintenance. And whereas repairing and maintaining infrastructure in Gustavus is consistent with a similar nationwide intent as expressed in the bipartisan infrastructure bill recently passed by the U.S. Congress and signed by the President. And whereas the City of Gustavus intends to maintain the bridge in safe and serviceable condition for at least another four decades. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of Gustavus, Alaska, approves and supports city application for grant funding to complete repairs to the Good River Bridge with the goal of keeping it safe in safe and reliable service for at least four more decades. And be it further resolved that the Gustavus City Council authorizes the execution of an agreement with the state promising to provide the funding commitments and management ownership responsibilities and maintenance operations responsibilities identified within the project application and authorizes the mayor to sign the project agreement detailing these commitments. And be it further resolved that the city council directs the mayor to assure completion of the required repairs with all deliberate speed for the good of the community. Okay. We have a motion that has been seconded. We read it. I'll open the floor to public comment on this resolution in support of our grant. Any members of the public wish to comment? Okay, seeing none, do any council members wish to comment on this resolution? Okay, seeing none, Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call vote, please?
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Minkowiak?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Bishop?
Yes.
Motion passes with all in favor.
Okay, thank you. We'll hope for success in getting some funding for this project and keep our bridge in good order. That brings us to city council reports, and this is an opportunity for council members first before I give a mayor's report. Any council members have projects they've been working on and would like to report on those projects. Councilmember Owens, you had, sorry, turn your light on there. You're off now. Okay, good.
I do have some things to discuss, but will there be another opportunity?
Right, we will also have questions and comments. If it was on the bill, maybe that would fit better in questions and comments. If you want to do that, you're...
Oh, I could go ahead and do the bill now.
Okay, well, if you want to do the bill now, that's fine. It's sort of a project you're working on, so we'll look at it that way.
And then I think Tanya has a project that she'll want to...
Definitely, yes. We want to hear from Tanya on the meeting Friday, for example.
Okay, I've been tracking some of the legislation. Senate Bill 38 is a bill that Representative David Wilson, I believe he's from Wasilla, introduced. He introduced it last session and it didn't make it out, but it looks like it has a good chance this year, has a lot of support. I think he has three or more co-sponsors. It's an interference with emergency communications. Evidently there were some, I don't have the newspaper article in front of me, but there was a problem, I think, in Wasilla where somebody had called in 83 or 84 times to 911, and there were other issues of anger, and so they wanted to make sure that it's clear that during this type of conduct is a criminal act, and hopefully to deter it. So in looking at it, it seemed to me that it was either a couple of portions of it. One is describes who in an emergency communication center, which I think is pretty clear that we're not. It's a facility for handling emergency communications with emergency communications workers. The other was a definition of emergency communication made to or from an emergency communication center or between police, fire, or medical service personnel in response to an emergency. I wanted to make sure that Gustavus Dispatch, since we had an incident of a person making a fraudulent call, 911 call. And so I took an interest in this and have made a suggestion that in the definition of emergency communication, that they include the dispatch in there, just one word. And so I've suggested to the mayor that we send a letter to Senator Wilson, letting him know of our support. And AML, Alaska Municipal League, is also monitoring. I guess they won't make a determination of which of their preferred legislation. I'm looking at the city administrator until the meeting, their legislative priorities. It is on their list. SB 38. Yeah.
They'll have a legislative update session at the, you know, the meeting. And so we should know a little more then about what's going on, but you are specifically interested in one version or the other?
It's supporting, I would like us to support the bill, but also to see if they could make that slight tweak to ensure that small communities that don't have a call center or a communications facility, you know, because there are other small rural communities that, you know, they send the dispatchers home with the radios. So I want to make sure that they understand, you know, that they're also, that we're also in rural areas, also maybe running into the same problems they are in the larger hubs. And we'll have a letter. I think the mayor is going to write a letter.
Will you have that for me to take with me so I can, okay. So that'll be for next week when I go.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that none of the council members had any objection to this. I think it's important to assure that people do not misuse the 911 facility and call centers with harassing calls, as apparently has happened in some communities. And I really appreciate Council Member Owens flagging this for our attention so that we can support it. And so if nobody has any objection, I will, he's drafted a very good letter in support of it. And I would like to sign that letter on our letterhead and send it in if nobody objects.
I have a draft if anybody wants to look at it.
I can, you want to just email it to me so I can, yeah. Or do you want me, so I can look at it and just send you any comments? Or you want me to do it now?
Oh, no. I would just, here's a copy if you want it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can look it over and if you think we've got it properly covered, then I'll sign it tomorrow and we'll make it into a PDF and we can email it to the committee and you can take it in also.
Okay. Just an aside, we did have an issue once a very, very, very long time ago with a couple of kids, but it was quickly remedied with a visit by the police or the fire chief.
Yeah.
It was young kids, but yeah.
Yeah, we have dedicated responders in this community and we don't need them being dragged out of their homes or something in the middle of the night for a false call, that sort of thing. So we need them to be fresh and respect their willingness to respond on behalf of the community. So this supports that kind of service. Okay. Council Member Lewis, can I call on you for a report on the meeting on Friday night at the GCC?
Sure, thanks. Yeah, we had a great meeting with Claire Geldof, our public health nurse, and I'm going to guess 20 to 30 people maybe showed up, and including a lot of the city council members. Thank you guys for coming. And it was pretty, very informal. People shared concerns they have for this town. And Claire shared resources in pretty much all in Juneau that would be accessible to us here. And you know, there's just a lot of great things talked about, but so some outcomes are we have a email list now of people that are interested, and people keep telling me, giving me their emails since, you know, we're adding to the list as we go. And I sent an email out to our team who's working on this and with my ideas of next steps. And I'd like to make a little flyer, you know, just a one page information sheet that shares all the information that Claire shared, you know, who you call when you have a problem with substance abuse or mental health or domestic violence or sexual assault. So just a real handy thing that we can send out to the people on our email list and then also share if people express interest, kind of similar to the signs we have in the bathrooms, but a little more information Not really a flyer as much, or not something that's posted as much as something that's shared. So that's one idea. And then just lots of people at the meeting and since have talked specifically about prevention of sexual assault. And so I think our next step is to try to bring over someone from AWARE, and you know, AWARE shelter. They work with victims of domestic violence as well as sexual assault, and they also do a lot of preventative programs. So I think that would be a good next step in terms of our next meeting and speaker. And then a lot of people also expressed a real desire to get the school involved, and so I think we need to keep trying on that. And the other kind of main topic I think was things for teens to do. And there is a group working on that right now. So I think that's underway in sort of a separate but parallel effort to get teens at the table and sharing with, you know, with the town leaders what they need and what we can do for teens so that they're not bored and getting into trouble, basically. So that's it. And if any council members who are there would like to add anything, please do.
Councilmember Owens would like to speak on this too.
Okay, thank you, Tanya. I would just point out that Colleen Stansbury has sent a letter out to council members talking about the meeting and also looking for a structure and action plan to move forward. She said that she will commit to donating and fundraising to underwrite local volunteers to learn how to become prevention trainers. These people, this trained, would help us all create safe spaces and prevent violence. The model of local people learning how to address local needs is powerful and would free us from relying on outside agencies to visit at their convenience. I call on local business individuals in the city of Gustavus to become contributing partners to this end. If we can create awareness and prevention programs from within the community, we can begin to create a culture of safety and commitment, prevention in all we do. I think this is a really good idea because, as Claire was saying, the outreach person at AWARE, that position hasn't been funded, and that there's no longer, I think, anyone who's actively doing that. And I think the idea of growing our own with local people being trained is a real good option, and I'm glad that she proposed that. I don't know how we would go forward from this. I think it would be or what opportunities do we have to fund it?
Yeah, I think it's mm-hmm. a great idea too, and I think we need the expertise of an agency like AWARE to get this going, because as you know, sexual assault prevention and response is very, very delicate, and there's a lot of, you know, potential trauma involved. And I think we would need professionals to train us. And so that would be my hope with bringing someone away from AWARE over, is to try to get that type of training.
Other city administrator,
I'm wondering, I know that both Sarupa and Sarah Lynn have an affinity for Gustavus. they like to come over here, and Sarah Lynn's pretty much retired, but you know, they may be willing to just come over just to start the conversation and help the community out on what direction to take. So they may be an extremely good resource and may be willing to do it, just, you know, to come for a visit and start the conversation. Just putting that out there.
Okay, we have council members with comments or thoughts on this important item. I would like to express my gratitude to Councilmember Lewis for taking the leadership of organizing that meeting and putting together a sort of a steering team, an ad hoc steering team to work these issues. And we very much appreciate Claire Geldhoff, our public health nurse, coming over here and leading that that meeting. I think she did a wonderful job, and she took a lot of notes and is looking for ways to support us to the ends that of the needs that were expressed during the meeting. I think the city has a role here to build partnerships with other agencies, aware that with the public health operation in Juneau, Claire in particular, the search clinic, perhaps the school. So to enable, to gather the information and help that would enable our local folks throughout the community who are interested in working on this and making progress to be successful. And it's a really important proactive effort instead of waiting for a serious event to occur and then reacting to it. We're getting out in front of this as a community, and it says a lot about the kind of community we have, and it reflects things in our vision statement, I think. So I look forward to the continued leadership of Councilmember Lewis on this. So it'll be should be something that we're talking about regularly as we go forward. Councilmember Lewis, I hope you'll continue to report and recommend to us what we should be doing to make the most of this opportunity. Anything else, Tanya, to add to that? I don't know if we lost her. I guess she's still on mute. Oh, there she came off mute.
Can you hear me?
Now we do, yes.
Okay. I just said thank you for that. And if anyone has any other ideas, just please let me or Leanne know at any time. Thanks.
Okay. Do any other council members have a project they're working on that they'd like to report on? We still have council member questions and comments on general things. There's another opportunity coming up in a minute. Council member Driscoll.
Yes, I just have an idea that I've been kicking around, and I'm open for feedback or any comments from the public as well as other council members. And thinking about access to the beach, and I'm thinking about how that's the beach is an important place for all of us to go, and knowing that we do have a project in mind that we're going to be hardening the trail, I still want to make sure that that beach is accessible to everyone. And so I've been looking around at some other places and see how do they deal with having access to places that are off the pavement. And I've found that in Lake Clark, they've got some of these really cool looking wheelchairs that are beach wheelchairs, and they have these big wheels in the back, and they can go through the sand, and they look pretty pretty useful and making our beach accessible. And so I'm just kind of at the point of doing some research, of looking into it and wanting feedback to see if people would be interested or thinking that that was a good idea. I think it could be used by people who are in a wheelchair already. You've got your wheelchair that is also in your living room. You don't necessarily want to take it out onto the beach. I've spent, probably 10 years with an aunt who had a stroke, and she was in a wheelchair, and it was my job when I would go to visit her to be pushing the wheelchair. And it was not something that could have gone on a trail. And so I think about when my father came to visit and he had a walker, and I think, God, if he would have had a wheelchair like that, we could have gone for a walk down the beach. And so I think it has a very wide range of users, but there's also, of course, a lot of issues. We'd have to figure out like where to keep it and how to make sure it was safe and things like that. And so right now I'm just kind of in the fact-finding stage, but if anybody has any interest or any comments or anything, I'm certainly open, and you can either email me at the, you know, my personal address or the one that is the council one, or just stop and talk to me. But I'd like lots of input because it is something that is very close to my heart about making sure that everyone has access to that beach. And I think that this could be a way to assure that.
Okay, thanks. Anybody have any questions on the fat tired beach wheelchair idea? Janine did send me the link to it, to information on it, and looks really cool. And I think there's a real potential. We're doing the Hardin Beach Trail that I'll comment on in my report in a minute here, but a chair like that would allow somebody who is wheelchair bound to explore beyond the Hardin Trail that we're doing. Say out the east side of the dock on the old tracks out there that aren't really suitable for a regular wheelchair, but these fat tired beach wheelchairs look like they'd be ideal. You could probably even take it down on the sand strand. So I think it's a cool idea, and I would like to continue to look into it in a way to store it and make it available. Okay, any other projects that anybody's working on that they'd like to report on? Any other council members? Anybody online? Okay, well, I'll give a brief summary of my, to the extent I'm ever brief, of my mayor's report. The first thing I think could be really important for this community, and council member Miskowiak and I have been working on this together for a long time and staying in touch with AP&T on the electric rates, the effect of our electric rates following the Intertie startup. And you may recall that back in 2017 or so, as we were really pushing for this Intertie to get constructed and working with AP&T, we were under the impression that the rate, there would be a significant rate benefit to Gustavus ratepayers due to the extra sales of electricity to the Park Service. In other words, the value of those sales would be distributed back to the community in a credit of some kind. And the intent was that that credit would not affect our power cost equalization credits. And as we looked at our bills, as the Intertie finally went into service in December.
And champagne. Steak and champagne.
Are you ready to eat?
Sure.
Paul, your mic is on, or you're not muted, Paul.
Yeah. Okay.
That sounds very nice, though.
Yeah. We'll agree to that.
We're on our way.
Okay. So as we... Well, maybe some champagne will be in order, actually, as we work through this. So what we, as we looked at our bills, it became evident that the way that PCE was being calculated, as required by the state, the PCE or the Park Service credit was distributed, the full value of the estimated extra sales for the next 90 days is distributed via the cost of power adjustment part of our bill. You'll recall that our electric bills have two parts. One is the base rate, and that's determined during the most recent rate case and reflects the fixed costs and continuing operating costs of the electric system and their overhead and so forth. And then the cost of power adjustment, or COPA, is the way that they recover the cost of diesel fuel when diesel generators have to be used to supplement in times of low flow on the stream. So what they decided to do was to add a credit for the Park Service sales, which amounted to 11.7 cents per kilowatt hour, into the COPA, changing COPA from being a positive addition for diesel use to being negative. In other words, reducing the base rate. But then it turned out that when PCE was calculated, which is for residents and agencies that qualify for PCE, that PCE was reduced because the cost of the cost of our power had been reduced by the credit from the Park Service. And that was contrary to the expectations and promises to the community of this project. So we ended up, the way it was working out, the PCE system was getting most of the benefit of the intertie and the sales to the park, and the residential ratepayers weren't getting any benefit, by the way, or weren't getting as much. The businesses get the full 11.7 cents of benefit off of their bills, but that's because they don't have PCE. So they're still paying more than the other ratepayers, not because they don't have PCE, but they get a significant drop due to the credit from the Park Service sales. And that's really important if you're a business running freezers and refrigerators and lights and stuff like that that runs a lot of power. So that does reduce the cost of doing business here in Gustavus, just that piece of it, which we should get some benefit and lower prices for commodities or things that we buy. But for residential bills, it was a disappointment. And it was not only disappointing to those of us here in Gustavus who looked at this, but also to the Alaska Power and Telephone folks, and particularly Jason Custer, who's their Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, and who has always been a big promoter of electrification here and of the intertie and reducing rates and reducing carbon emissions. So he's been an advocate of just the kind of things that most of us are in favor of too. So he took it upon himself to develop a filing that will go to the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, to change how PCE is calculated, and if it's adopted, we will get the full credit. We'll get the full PCE in addition to the credit from the National Park Service sales, or some portion. The filing would ask for all of it, so that would bring about a substantial reduction in the cost of electricity to ratepayers in Gustavus. I had a text today from Jason Custer saying that they have reviewed it. His proposed filing has been approved within AP&T, and they've also ran it by the regulatory agency support called RAPA of Alaska, which is part of the Department of Law in Alaska. And RAPA advocates for ratepayers, and they support making a change to such that Gustavus would get the benefit of the full benefit of the intertie sales. So they are about to file the filing with RCA. It's not public yet, but they will, once it is public, then we will have an opportunity to comment on it. My intention is that we would comment very strongly in support of it because it's a major benefit to our community. So that's something that we'll be monitoring very closely. And I very much appreciate Jason Custer's advocacy on behalf of the community of Gustavus for lower rates and for making the most of the intertie operation, both for reducing carbon emissions and reducing our rates here in Gustavus. So we'll continue. Jim and I will continue to report to the council and the community as this moves forward. And again, we'll be supporting it before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. We have a small project we're gonna do that we've issued a notice to proceed to Glacier Bay Construction for a little stream bank modification at the Grandpa's Farm Road Bridge site. It's a change order to develop a high water flow bench, they call it, along the north bank of the stream to handle water more effectively in high flow events on that stream. It's something that was not in the original design, and Fish and Wildlife is now doing that on projects like the culvert removal and bridge that we did. And so they asked if we would, if they could pay for that alteration. And so Glacier Bay Construction will be doing that as soon as conditions allow. And we thank Kathy Strebler, whose property edge that is, for allowing us to re-enter that area on her property and make that change. So that'll be happening soon. On Monday, February 6th, the DOT bridge section came out and inspected the new timber bridges that we put in on Dickey Drive, and then the most recent one on Grandpa's Farm Road. They to do an initial inspection on both those bridges, which they hadn't seen before. And we got them out to the site and gave them all the drawings and everything they needed. They seem to be real pleased with the bridges, and we'll get the official report in another week or so. I worked with folks in the Blue Heron subdivision off of Royal Road, which is not a labeled city road at this point. It's platted as Royal Road, and it branches off of Gustavus Road directly opposite Glacier Bay Construction's property on the south side of the road, and runs south from there into that subdivision. There's several homes in there. And I was approached by Sally McLaughlin for assistance in what they would need to do to upgrade that road so the city could take over and maintenance of it. And the neighborhood is also considering whether to change the name from the platted name Royal Road to something else. And Susan Ogden is organizing that decision within the owners of properties on there as to whether to change the road. So we've given them the information on how to go about both of those, and we're looking forward to hearing what the neighborhood wants to do and seeing what we can do to achieve their intent there. We've talked about the library bike shelter project. The Beach Hardened Trail project is the next one on here. John Berry's our project manager for that. And John and I walked the site a few days ago, and he's developing bid documents for us to build that hardened trail out to the bench site and the fire pit site on the west side of the beach park. And we're hoping to get that done this coming construction season. We've talked about the Good River Bridge repairs already. On other road projects, we have a number of turnarounds on cul-de-sacs that we are planning to build as soon as conditions allow. And I've been out to those sites with Justin Marchbanks. Well, these are little projects that we can do on our annual maintenance contract. So we'll be doing them on Porcupine, which is off the end of Owen in the Owen subdivision, Meadow Lane, which runs off of Good River Road, Extra Tough, which runs off of Code Road, Mary's Road, which comes off of Good River Road, and actually at the far end of the west end of Good River Road, to improve the turnarounds to make it easier for us to maintain those areas, and particularly to plow snow, have room to push snow and make for a decent turnaround there all winter. We've been lucky this year not to have heavy snow, but last year some of those were just about impossible to plow. Our city administrator, Kathy Leary, has been working really hard with the Homeland Security Office in Palmer and to expedite reimbursements for the December 2020 flood repairs we did. You may remember that Tom Williams and I spent probably hundreds of hours with FEMA trying to qualify for these funds. And so far, we've only got about $40,000 out of close to $200,000 total that we spent. And we're continuing to work with the state Department of Homeland Security that is now responsible for directing the final funding to us. And we expect to be successful in that. It's just frustrating because of the very bureaucratic nature of FEMA business. I've been working with Meadowbrook on summer flowers for city facilities, and she's getting prices for us for some flower baskets and planter plants to put in our planter boxes here in the park and probably over at the library and so forth to beautify our communities. And we're hopeful that we'll have some really nice stuff out to provide a cheery atmosphere even by Memorial Day. This year, we're trying to get it done a lot earlier. And as I discussed with you just a few minutes meetings back, we're planning to spend about $1,500 on this project. I may be asking for a little extra money to do some perennial shrubs for our Salmon River Park as a separate project. We'll look into that when we're doing budgeting for the next operating year. Okay, and I had a final note there on COVID outbreak in Gustavus. We still have some cases, and we've kept mask wearing as a voluntary option for people using city facilities without trying to require it. And I've been pleased to see that many have felt that it was a worthy measure to take. As many of us this evening are wearing masks here too. But one item that I haven't made any progress on, and I need to work on, by the way, is the expansion of the playground equipment in the park here. And that sort of is coming up to a little higher level of interest for me after the meeting Friday night, where one of the comments was that kids here just don't have enough things to do. And the playground equipment is good for really little kids, but kids up to 12, I mean, from say 7 to 12 or so, it's really too small. And it'd be nice if we can have stuff that would be great for them. That's only part of the population that we need to find more things to do, but it does suggest to me that the city can be looking for opportunities to provide facilities that give young people here in our community a healthy outdoor activity to do. And so this is just the start of it. And I want to move that forward in the coming weeks. Okay, so that's my report. Does anybody have any questions on any of those things? Okay, then we can move on to the last city council questions and comments. Was there anything else that anybody wanted to raise, something you'd like us to be looking into or do, or Councilmember Owens?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to bring back up the Wilson Road project. Unfortunately, you weren't available during the CIP work session that we had. We talked about it.
Yeah.
So I'll briefly go through it. We received a letter from Colleen Stansbury and Bruce Smith dated January 14th. Concerning the damage to their personal and business property due to the lack of ditching and culverts on the south part of Wilson Road to Four Corners. There had been fill added to the fireweed parking lot, which I think was in the right of way, which has had the unfortunate impact of increasing the water pooling on the Snug Harbor property. And it's starting to cause damage and possibly, to the trees. I noticed as I drove by today that the parking lot at Fireweed is also pooling. So what we really need is ditching and culverts on Wilson Road. And back in 2018, an ordinance, NCO ordinance, was passed on June 11th for $40,000 for Wilson Road drainage improvement. I've been kind of confused about, I know that there were improvements that were done on Wilson Road, but also in the current CIP, City of Gustavus Capital Improvement Plan, there were two mentions of road improvements. One of them was in the current currently funded for 2024, which was City Road Improvements Phase 2 Road Improvements. NCOD used most of Wilson Road Improvement funds allocated in 2018, and that was budgeted at $30,000. And then in the mid-range, it defines what the improvements phase two implementation is, which is a number of different tasks using an engineer, using the city LIDAR data with an engineer's recommendation. And I don't know if the Wilson Road, the fact that it's not defined as an obligated fund, and that, and Ben isn't here, but he said earlier tonight that the fund source was used up. And in fact, it's in the whole negative $19,000. I don't understand quite all the funding. I don't know if there is $30,000 left of the original $40,000 from that NCO that's being diverted to other road projects. And I would note, Mr. Mayor, that you'd also noted in your report that we will continue to plan ditching and drainage improvement on several roads to be completed in the coming summer. One of my projects for the summer is to try and start working on strategic plan and all of our other plans. It'd be wonderful if we had a road improvement plan, because I don't know how those priorities are developed. I would really like to see the Wilson Road ditching and culverting be put in place this summer, perhaps in advance of other, because this seems to be, this is of some urgency. This is causing people's, you know, property damage, perhaps irreparable property damage. So if we can do that, can we do that?
You bet. Okay. I'm all for it. The Wilson Road project is an iterative thing. And we made use of the flood situation to improve a lot of the ditching. We excavated ditches that were plugged and actually made them much deeper and bigger. And then we extended them. Some of that is money we're still trying to collect. The intent of that original $40,000 was to ditch to pull relatively shallow ditches all the way up to the gravel pit area on both sides. I think our visions are much bigger now and doing much more comprehensive ditching along there and culverts, and also to do that lower section down, you know, by the Snug Harbor Liquor all the way down to the corner. In fact, I had a discussion with Justin Marchbanks on that just a few days ago. We've got to figure out exactly where to discharge water from that area, how to get it to move away from the Four Corners point, which direction. And so it is a project that we do intend to do. And my thought has been to continue to recycle the money that we got from FEMA to continue working Wilson Road and several other roads. We have similar problems really on same old road. It floods just about as badly, and a few other locations, but Wilson Roads really are top priority for that. So I'm fully supportive of your recommendation, and we'll keep working it.
Okay. And I would just point out that Wilson Road is like one of the two major north-south conduits, and it's the only one that's unpaved. So I would like that to be the highest priority.
Okay. I can adopt that priority. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Any other council comments or whatever? Okay, then I think we can go to the final opportunity for public comment on non-agenda items. Do any members of the public wish to make a comment on a non-agenda item? Okay, I guess nobody still does wish. So with that, we can conclude our evening, and we'll adjourn at 9:28 p.m. Thank you all for participating.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Jim. Time for the champagne.